Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the fastest growing segment of our society. To those of you who are like me and know that there's something wrong, something destructive about the religious and political institutions that are assaulting our society. We know that there's also something wrong in media reporting, in military invasions, and jaundiced economic schemes. We realize that the institutions that have been positioned as the solution to these problems are actually the problem. They are not the solution. So we are not going to prevail by rearranging the deck chairs on our Titanic of state. Therefore, instead of merely presenting the news, our mission is to understand what is causing these tragedies that are besieging our planet while predicting how these events will influence our world. And that is why in our second hour, we're going to offer hope, an opportunity to engage God on His terms through evidence and reason, since His covenant provides the lone source of hope in an otherwise troubled world. If you'd like to participate in this discussion, that's toll-free, 877-300-7645. I'm going to share with you what happened over the weekend in four different countries. And I'm going to preface this review of the news in these four countries, all events that took place on either Saturday or Sunday, with this. If you do not despise Islam, if you are unwilling to hold Islam accountable for the carnage that it has amassed and continues to amass each day, then there's something wrong with you. If you have been poisoned to the point that you can no longer think, and that you are so indoctrinated with political correctness that you think that the answer is to tolerate, embrace, celebrate our differences, and therefore you are accepting of Islam, then you are merciless. Because the dogma that your endorsement embraces is the most murderous that man has ever invented. And the beat goes on everywhere in the world, primarily because our politicians, our militaries, our media, our academicians all want you deceived. They want to play you for a fool. They want to create this illusion that terrorists, unrelated to anything other than perhaps Al-Qaeda, are responsible for radicalizing a religion and turning what would otherwise be a good, peaceful religion into a merciless assault. No, that's just not true. Al-Qaeda is meaningless in every one of these attacks. The problem here is that one common denominator in 99% of terrorist attacks around the world, Islam. Not a corruption of the religion. The religion as it was lived and preached by Muhammad. Muhammad was a terrorist. He led 75 terrorist raids in the first 10 years of the Islamic era. Islam was financed based upon terrorism. Jihad is holy war against all humankind. Muslims will not stop killing unless the world starts holding them accountable. Here's the first of those stories. A pair of suicide bombers blew themselves up outside a 130-year-old Anglican church in Pakistan immediately after Sunday Mass, killing at least 78 people in the deadliest attack on Christians in that predominantly Muslim country. Islamist violence has been on the rise in Pakistan, undermining Prime Minister Sharif's efforts to tame the insurgency by launching peace talks with the Pakistani Taliban. It's just astonishing how stupid journalists are today. Yes, 78 Christians were killed by Muslims. They were killed by those who had been taught what the Quran has to say. The Quran tells Muslims to kill Christians. It says that Christians are the enemy of Islam. They didn't have to corrupt their religion. They just had to read the Quran to come to that conclusion. And there is no possibility of taming an insurgency by launching peace talks with fundamentalist Muslims. Muslims have been taught by Muhammad to lie. They are told by the Quran and their God Allah that they are to form treaties and agreements with those that they consider to be hypocrites, and that would be a peaceful Muslim, but are told that those treaties are just a ploy to make the victim easier prey. They're expressly told in the ninth surah that any treaty between a Muslim and a non-Muslim is not binding on the Muslim. And so negotiate all you want. All you will do is put yourself in the same position that the Filipinos find themselves today, where they, several years ago, decided, you know, we're losing this battle to the Moro-Islamic terrorist organization. And so let's negotiate with them. Let's capitulate and give them some of what they want. Well, they took all that they wanted. But what they wanted in return was peace. Sounds like the Middle East peace talks between the mythical people known as the Palestinians and Israel. The Muslims take what is offered, and they never return what is sought, which is peace. Well, such is the case in Pakistan. The Pakistani Taliban is part of the Pakistani government. It was created expressly to control Afghanistan. And there is no way to have peace talks with them other than to turn the government over to them, which is the ultimate goal of the Taliban. These explosions struck the historic white stone All Saints Church in the city of Peshawar, as hundreds of parishioners, many of them women and children, streamed out of the building. Interior Minister Ali Khan said that the death toll of 78 included 34 women and 7 little children. In remarks televised live from Peshawar, more than 100 people, he said, had been savagely wounded. Why is it that the President of the United States hasn't drawn a red line on bombings like this, on the killing of the most innocent and unprotected people in the world, Christians living in an Islamic country? No one is more vulnerable. Why doesn't the President of the United States condemn this? Why didn't he say that we need to bomb the Pakistani government for allowing this to happen, for this kind of savagery to be perpetrated on Christians in that country? The Taliban-linked militant group, TTP, Jundallah, claimed responsibility within hours of the attack. They said, they are the enemies of Islam, therefore we target them. We will continue our attacks on non-Muslims on Pakistani land. Pakistan was named Land of the Pure. It's supposed to be pure Islam. Islam is wholly intolerant. This notion that we are intolerant of intolerance, that is the mantra of those completely poisoned by political correctness, shows the fallacy of their argument, which is that how can you be tolerant of groups that are intolerant? And the moment you become intolerant of groups that are intolerant, then you are intolerant. Well, here we have Muslims saying we target them, we kill women and children because they are enemies of our religion, Islam. We will continue to attack non-Muslims in our country. Christians make up about 4% of Pakistan's population of 180 million people and tend to keep a very low profile. Well, they have no choice. They have dhimmi status in an Islamic country. They're taxed at a horrible rate, a crippling rate, and they have no rights. Muslim Sunni militants, this article says, frequently bomb targets they see as heretical, including Christians and Sufi Muslims, as well as the minority Shiite population. Not long ago, 40 houses and a church were set ablaze by a mob of 1,000 Muslims in a town in Punjab. At least 7 Christians were burned alive. 17 Christians were killed in an attack in a church in Bashawalpur as well. That was the first. Let's move to the second. Islamist militants were holding hostages on Sunday at a shopping mall in Nairobi. That's a long way from Pakistan. We're now in Kenya, where at least 68 people were killed in an attack by Somalia's Al-Shabaab group. The Al-Qaeda-affiliated movement, you know, it's interesting that Al-Qaeda didn't get mentioned in Pakistan because the media has no problem demeaning the Taliban. But here, rather than just recognize that there really is no association with Al-Qaeda and Al-Shabaab, that the only common denominator they have is the Quran, here the connection was made. Why? So it's more politically correct to speak against them. Anyways, is that their motivation behind their attack was that they want the Kenyan government to stop interfering with their desire to control Somalia. There was no word on other demands from the dozen or so gunmen and gunwomen who had barricaded themselves and an unknown number of hostages in a Kenyan supermarket. Today, this morning, the Kenyan government is responding, and they have turned Nairobi into a war zone. We'll return with Shattering Myths after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're going to return our attention to Kenya, where the president said that he is not going to abandon the war on terror. And so long as we call it a war on terror and we mislead our people around the world, whichever nation it may be, then we have no hope of prevailing. There is no such thing as a war on terror. It is a despicable myth. The war on terror is just created for no other reason than to allow governments like the United States to amass large militaries and to usurp freedoms from its people. Terror is a tactic. It's been used throughout the ages. Most recently, the United States has been the greatest perpetrator of this tactic. We used it to win the in the Pacific in World War II. We even used it in Europe. We firebombed German cities. We firebombed Japanese cities. This is not a war on terror. And if we are fighting against a tactic and not against those who have perpetrated and continue to perpetrate these heinous acts, then we have zero chance of prevailing. And we really have no chance of prevailing so long as we consider it a war. If we instead engage with words wielded wisely, instead we respond by telling the truth about how maniacal, how depraved Muhammad was, what the oldest texts have to say about him, then there is no justification for Islam. It becomes impossible for Muslims to motivate young boys and girls to go kill themselves for the cause. Anyway, he said, we will not abandon the war on terror in Somalia, which is a war against where fundamentalist Muslims are trying to take over the country. They have for now decades. They turned to Somalia into a living hellhole. But he was cautious about the outcome, saying only that the chances of the attackers being neutralized were as good as we can hope for. We will punish the mastermind swiftly and painfully, he said. And in addition, what are you going to do? We're going to go back and kill Muhammad? Good luck with that. In addition to the dead, more than 175 people were wounded in the attack at the supermarket. Previous to such raids, we find the 2008 Mumbai attacks on, or the January Al-Qaeda assault on the Afghanistan, or the Algerian gas plant. What this journalist is trying to say, that in previous raids, both in Russia, in Mumbai, and in Algeria, they have ended with most of the hostages losing their lives. And this is true. You know, it's the interesting thing about Islam. Muhammad realized very early on that kidnapping for ransom was a very effective way to fund his fledgling religion. And so Muhammad set the example that Muslims follow. They are all too willing to take hostages and negotiate their lives for what they want. It typically turns out badly for everyone. British Prime Minister David Cameron, confirming that at least three Britons were dead, said we should prepare ourselves for further bad news. You know, you, Mr. Cameron, are amongst the greatest perpetrators of the myth that Islam is not responsible. You can have a Muslim shouting Allahu Akbar while he cuts off the heads of one of your soldiers, and you will say that this has nothing to do with Islam. So, yes, your people should prepare themselves for further bad news because you are bad news. And speaking of bad news, U.S. President Barack Obama called Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta to express condolences for the, quote, terrorist attack, and offered support to bring the perpetrators to justice. Yes, he was really effective at bringing the perpetrators of the terrorist attack in Benghazi to justice. He's the perfect guy to call. But you notice here, when there's a group that the world is wont to link to Al-Qaeda, oh, Barack Obama, he's right there. He's offering his support, wants to unify the appeal that the whole world is fighting Al-Qaeda. Oh, that's not true. But where was his phone call when the Christians were killed in even greater numbers in Pakistan? Dutch and Chinese citizens were also murdered in the attack claimed by Al-Shabaab, where a French mother and daughter and two diplomats from Canada and Ghana were also killed. U.S. citizens were wounded. For hours after Saturday's attack, the dead had been strewn around tables and unfinished meals. When we return to Shattering Myths, we have another suicide bomber, this one in Iraq, where many thousands of people have been killed by suicide bombers since the beginning of the year. It's another red line that the president did not draw. He seems to be unconcerned with Islamic suicide bombings, and we'll have to question why that is the case when we return after the commercial break. We're reviewing the carnage that took place over the weekend in the world of Islam. A suicide bomber blew himself up inside of a tent filled with mourners in a predominantly Sunni district of Baghdad, killing at least 16 people, mutilating the bodies of 35 more. The attack came a day after a triple suicide bombing at a funeral in Baghdad's Shiite stronghold of Sadr City that killed 85 people. So here's over 100 people having been murdered in Iraq as a direct result of the infighting between Sunnis and Shias. This is a war that America unleashed by its invasion of Iraq. Yes, we went in and broke the country and then left it broken. The journalist here says Iraq's delicate sectarian balance. There is no thing that is the least bit delicate about the rift between Sunni and Shia Muslims. It's 1,300 years old. And it has never been a balancing act. One side is in control and suppresses the other, or there is civil war. When there isn't one side that has dominion over the other, what you see is what we're witnessing in Iraq and what we're witnessing in Syria. And it says that this delicate balance has been strained to the near breaking point by the civil war in neighboring Syria. No, that is the opposite of what is true. The United States took a dictator who was able to keep the Shias in check, recognizing that he was at war with Iran, which is predominantly Shia. And so he managed to keep the Shia in check, and so there was no sectarian infighting. But when the Americans invaded Iraq and deposed the Sunni dictator and empowered a Shiite government, well, then Iraq and Iran became unified, and the Sunnis became oppressed. Then the United States decided to arm the Sunnis in the Awakening Program, and as a result of that, an internal civil war broke out. It has been on and off ever since the American invasion. It is the Iraqi civil war, this breaking of Iraq by America, that led to the Syrian civil war. It's not the case of the Syrian civil war inflaming sectarian tensions in Iraq. It's exactly the opposite. By giving Iraq to Iran, Iran was able to control Syria, which had previously been a client of Iraq. And the Sunni Muslim fiefdoms in the Middle East, like Saudi Arabia in particular, and Qatar, which is the gunrunner for Islamist terrorists worldwide now, decided that a proxy war in Syria to coincide with this mystical notion of an Arab Spring would be a grand idea. And so they provided weapons and have steadily increased the capability of weapons, almost all American weapons, to the jihadists in Syria, and have even supplied tens of thousands of Sunni jihadists. As a matter of fact, one of the things that the Saudi Arabian government has done recently is that when the Sunni jihadists that they were arming were losing, they released thousands of Saudi prisoners. And prisoners that were facing lifetime sentences were given the opportunity to earn their freedom by accepting weapons and go to fight the great jihad in Syria. And so thousands of Saudi Arabian prisoners were unleashed against the Assad government. So it is the opposite of what this journalist writes. It isn't the Syrian civil war that has given birth to and has strained the delicate balance between Sunni and Shia in Iraq, but instead America's meddling that has given rise to the Syrian civil war. Both Sunni and Shiites have crossed into Syria from Iraq to fight on opposite sides of the conflict. It's actually far more Sunnis have done that than Shias. Very, very, very few Shias have done so because, you know, the government and Hezbollah is sufficient to keep the Sunnis in check. Al-Qaeda's Iraqi and Syrian branches merged, this journalist writes, earlier this year. That is also not true. There actually is a rift that was created. You see, the Islamic State in Iraq viewed itself as the progenitor of the Syrian civil war. That is probably true, that they were the first to weaponize the protests. And so the Islamic State in Iraq told Al-Nusra Front in a press release that the Al-Nusra Front, in that it was originally populated with Sunni jihadists from Iraq, from the Islamic State of Iraq, as they call themselves, that they really are a offshoot, a derivative, a franchise, if you will, of the Islamic State in Iraq. Well, the Al-Nusra Front objected and said, that's how we began. But, you know, we are now the king of jihadists, and there's no reason for us to take orders from the Islamic State of Iraq. And so it was then that Ayman al-Asari, Zawahiri, jumped in and he says, you know, I'd like to engage in this. And really the only active affiliate of al-Qaeda now anywhere in the world is the al-Nusra Front, the victory front of Islamic jihadists, the dominant force in the among the Syrian rebels. And it is they who acknowledge, yeah, we respect Ayman al-Zawahiri, the leader now of al-Qaeda. And so, once again, this journalist has everything upside down and backwards. Iraq has also witnessed, he or she concludes, several incidents in recent weeks suggesting that the Shiite militias, which have so far largely refrained from retaliating for attacks on Sunni insurgents, may once again be resorting to violence. This is untrue. The most recent exchange that has caused the death of about 5,000 people in Iraq just recently, just this year, is a direct result of Shias attacking a Sunni refugee camp, and of them using weapons of mass destruction, if you will, taking heavy artillery and bombarding the Sunni refugee camp. And so much of what we're seeing now is in retaliation for that. And if you recall, during the Iraqi war, the principal foe to the American troops were the Shiite militias. The Shiite militias killed more Americans, captured more Americans, beheaded more Americans, mutilated more Americans than any other group in Iraq. But America, ever the foolish one, gave Iraq to them. That was not the end of the carnage, although smaller by scale. A suicide bomber killed two people and injured 20 outside a police station in Russia's northern Caucasus region in the region called Dagestan. The insurgents, as they are called, they're just fundamentalist Muslims, wage almost daily violence in the North Caucasus region to create an Islamic State. It is a predominantly Muslim region which abuts the Black Sea. This is the area around the resort of Stoki, which is the site of the 2014 Winter Olympics. The Russians gave up much of their territory in the transition from communist to fascist. Most of Eastern Europe became independent countries. And there are now a half dozen or more Islamic countries in the south that were previously part of the USSR that are now independent countries. The reason that the Dagestan area and Chechnya haven't also been just abandoned and said, you know, you guys are murderous. We want nothing to do with you. There's just no reason for us to have a presence here. Go ahead and destroy yourselves, but do it independent of us. Is because of the issues or the proximity to the great oil and gas reserves that surround the Caspian Sea, the neighboring sea to the Black Sea. And the pipelines to bring the oil up from the Caspian Sea region into Russia require Russia to have a presence there. If it wasn't for that, this area would be abandoned to the Muslims. There's a move in Egypt that should also cause the world great pause. Back in the day of Mubarak, when a dictator, ruthless as he was, but typical dictator in the Islamic world, it's the Islamic world knows dictators. It does not know democracy, and that's not going to change. That back in the day that Mubarak was the favorite dictator of Egypt, he recognized that the Muslim Brotherhood was his greatest foe. And so he shut it down. He made it effectively illegal. Now, they continued to exist quietly. They just could not engage in politics. Well, then came the so-called Arab Spring, which was really an Islamic Reformation, one inspired by President Barack Hussein Obama. And when that occurred, the Muslim Brotherhood felt that it was time for them to come out of the closet. They found an affinity with 65% of the Egyptian people. 65% of the people voted for either them or the Salaf party that was even more fundamentalist Islamic than they. And they, as you know, elected President Mohamed Morsi. But Morsi did exactly as we would expect a fundamentalist Muslim to do. He conceived a constitution for Egypt that was based on Sharia law, Mohammed's example. Well, Mohammed was a terrorist. He was a rapist. He was a pedophile. He declared war on all non-Muslims. And as Egypt became nothing but a jihadist state, there are about 20% of Egyptians who said, you know, we're just not going to tolerate that. And those 20% rose up on one day, and the army seized the opportunity to go back into control of Egypt. And now the army has done what it did back during Mubarak's day. They have banned the Muslim Brotherhood. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the break. Returning back to the malfeasance in the world of Islam, we find that the Muslim Brotherhood has now been banned. This is the quote, the court bans the activities of the Muslim Brotherhood organization and its non-governmental organization and all of the activities that it participates in and any organization that is derived from it. Oh, that's pretty comprehensive. Bans the activities of the Muslim Brotherhood organization, its non-governmental organization, and all activities that it participates in and any organization derived from it. Oh, by the way, that would be Al-Qaeda. That would be Hamas. That would be the Aska Martyrs Brigade. That would be Islamic Jihad. That would be every Islamic terrorist organization of the Sunni persuasion anywhere in the world. Judge Mohammed al-Sayed said in a statement on Monday, according to Reuters, although the judge's name says that he, too, is from the same ilk. So here is a country that has just banned an organization that a year ago won the voting support, the democratic support, if you will, of two-thirds of the people of the country. So an organization that represents two-thirds of Egyptians has just been banned. Now, I'm going to tell you, the Muslim Brotherhood is a horrid organization. But the Muslim Brotherhood isn't the problem. The problem is Islam. So long as Islam continues to fester, there is no hope for Egypt. There's no hope for any Islamic country. The court also ordered the Muslim Brotherhood's assets confiscated. And this is far worse than what happened under Mubarak. We talk about military coups. Now, perhaps in the Islamic world, a military coup is the best possible outcome. America's experiment with democracy in the Islamic world has backfired. The Brotherhood was outlawed for most of its 85 years of existence, but after the 2011 ouster of autocrat Hosni Mubarak, it was allowed to work openly, formed a political party, and rose to power in a string of post-Mubarak elections. Freedom and Justice Party was the name of their political party, by the way. In March, it registered as a recognized NGO. The ruling, which can be appealed, opens the doors for authorities to track down the group's elaborate network of social services, dealing a deadly blow to its pillars of grassroots support. It works just like Hamas, the terrorist organization. It's the same as Hezbollah. They receive ungodly amounts of money from OPECers, and they use that money in two ways. Actually, three ways. They recognize that most Muslims are impoverished because Islam destroys the motivation to work. And so they provide money. But if you accept their money, you sign an oath of allegiance to them. Second is that it is a religious organization. They supply preachers and mosques to indoctrinate all who they can compel to listen to the jihadi message of Islam. And number three, they use that money to buy weapons, which they use against one another and against all non-Muslims. It is a horrible situation. And this is one that was, by the way, unleashed by President Barack Hussein Obama. It was his speech in Cairo that inspired Muslims to rise up. They have done so. Look at the consequence. Speaking of the consequence, the first of those dominoes to fall was in Tunisia. Tunisia's ruling Islamist. Now, it's interesting. This article by another nincompoop from the Reuters organization will call them Tunisia's ruling Islamist, which is their code word for fundamentalist Muslim. But then they will call the Islamist party that is in control, Ennahda, a moderate. In a bit of just stupid duplicity. But anyway, it begins. Tunisia's ruling Islamist rejected on Monday proposal under which they would step down pending elections, a decision likely to deepen the confrontation with secular opponents demanding their immediate resignation. They're being asked to resign for two reasons. One is they're trying to write Sharia law into the Constitution, and the two secular opponents that were the most popular they had killed. Tunisia, whose 2011 uprising was the first of a series across the Arab world, has been in turmoil since an opposition leader was assassinated in July. It was the first, the second of two, threatening a democratic transition once seen as the most promising in the troubled region. Well, now they say the moderate Islamist party, the Ennahda party, which is actually the most fundamentalist of the Islamic parties in Tunisia, says, no, we don't want to give hold, let go of power. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the news and break.